Blog Talk Radio.
Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Hit 'em high.
Then you hit 'em low.
Going straight to the hole. You ain't got no game. I'm breaking you out the frame, coming through like a train. Looking to take over the whole world is my goal. With my unstoppable crew taking all control. You can't get none of this. We're running this. Well, take up, Earthshaker, 3-point gunning this. Get off the lane. I'm coming through, and if you don't wanna move, I'm coming right through you.
It's like inch by inch and step by step. I'm closing in on your position, and destruction is my mission. No, 8 is not enough. Your whole squad better duck. It's like Swiss when I bust. Now your whole crew is dust. Coming through my area, I'ma have to bury you. The real scream team on your screen scene. It's like showdown under Rago. Tell me who wanna tangle with the ghetto witch doctor, neighborhood superhero.
We want it all.
It's only 3 seconds to score to win the game. Came to bring the ultimate pain up on the brain. Untamed, you will like it when I change into a type strange. Make low maniacal, monster in the game. And I got my eye on you, dead shot aim. As free throws keep coming down like rain. You feeling me, I'm feeling you, the monster gang. I'm telling you, pass me the rock, now I'm headed to the basket. Get up out my way is what you better do. My tactics is unsportsmanlike conduct, you better ask it. Don't get no better than this. You catch my drift, you get stripped by ball handlers, ruled by swag hammer. Danger, you dealing with official hoop bangers. With hang time, like a coat hanger. Jump with thunderous 360 degree tight dunks. What up, Doc? The monster funk.
Lightning strikes, the court lights get dim. Supreme competition is about to begin. Above the rim, finessing it, moves is animated. Once I get the ball in, I can't be deflated. A rugged paw, my monsters is getting money. With clicks, get the bugging, I'm snatching up their bunnies. Every step I take shakes the ground. I make you break your ankle, son, shake you down. This is my planet, about business, the best that ever done it. Can I get a witness? A cumulus cloud brings darkness up above. You in it for the money, or in it for the love, MJ? 23 ways to make a pay. Lounging in the mothership back around my way. A 28 light years old. If the rep get political, dribble like Bob Dole. Am I getting lyrical? Daddy, I think so. Monster, top of flavor, fluid, so clean.
Floating on.
What is happening? We're back once again. Welcome to another installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Rocket is here with you. We're live from now till 9 p.m. tonight. And we're taking calls all night at 347-327-9586. And we got a big show for you tonight. We got a lot of ground to cover, of course. We had a lot of stuff that's broken down in the last 24 to 48 to 72 hours. Of course, we got the whole Donald Sterling situation. Jameis Winston is a little bit in trouble. And, of course, our main cover tonight is Path to the Draft. We are officially just over a week, basically a week and a day away from the 2014 NFL Draft, which will take place in the Big Apple next Thursday through next Saturday, and it's going to be a big one. And to this day, even right now, I couldn't even tell you who the number one pick is going to be. That's what makes this draft so awesome and so amazing, because none of us really don't know. Now, the Houston Texans have the number one overall pick. They can go offense, they can go defense. The question is, are they going to go with a quarterback? Are they going to go defense? Are they going to take a guy like Jadeveon Clowney? Are they going to take Khalil Mack? Could they take Justin Gilbert? You know, there's just questions, big question marks surrounding the Texans organization. Now, they got a new coaching staff, so that's also going to play a key role. And they're going to have a new starting quarterback. Matt Schaub is no longer there. So if your guys like Arian Foster, Andre Johnson, J.J. Watt, you got to be thinking, what are we going to do? Who are we going to take? Or are we going to trade that pick? Because that's something that you have to take into consideration as well. Are we going to trade that pick? Are we going to trade down? Is someone going to give us an offer? Are we taking phone calls right now? There's just so much to consider, because you really don't know what's going to happen when it comes time to make this pick. That's what makes this so interesting. So we got that to talk about tonight. The NBA playoffs are heating up. And I got to say, it's the most unpredictable NBA postseason I've witnessed in years, because it seems like some of these lower-seeded teams are really making names for themselves. We already got one lower-seeded team that's moving on to the first round. And we got two lower-seeded teams that's on the verge of doing the same thing. Who'd have thunk it? There's so much ground that we have to cover tonight, and we are going to do that. We are definitely going to do that. But we do have a few birthdays to pass along. Happy 53rd birthday to one of the bad boys, Isaiah Thomas, formerly of the Detroit Pistons as a player. I don't know if anybody saw the Bad Boys documentary, but if you didn't, you missed a good one. That was the best ESPN 30 for 30 documentary I've ever watched, and I've seen just about all of them. That was the best one. Those guys, to this day, still don't give a damn, and you got to respect that. They demanded respect, and they were going to get it by any and all means necessary. I'm down with that. You see what I'm saying? I'm with that. And I appreciated ESPN for taking the time to do this. It was a great picture. If you missed it, you'll get a chance to watch it. Hope you set it on your TiVo recorder. You know, they'll be showing it again. You can possibly catch it on ESPN, or you can catch at least clips or pieces of it. But you missed a great one. Now, Isaiah Thomas turns 53 today. Of course, you know, played as a member of Detroit Pistons from 1981 to 1994. Became a head coach to Indiana Pacers in 2000, taking them to the finals where they lost to the Los Angeles Lakers. He also spent time as a coach at the New York Knicks, but that was a complete disaster. We're really not going to talk about that. And then he also played coach at the University of FIU from 2009 to 2012. Based off of his background, he's a two-time NBA champion, 1989 to 1990, back-to-back. Should have been three times. They should have beaten the Lakers in 88. I think that Pistons team in 88 was really, really good. But 89, they were something special. They really were. They had everything. All the pieces were there. The stars aligned. It was just beautiful to witness that. That was the first time, the first year I ever watched basketball, too. I was 3 years old. I watched Isaiah, I watched Magic, Jordan, Bird, and the rest of those guys. I watched all of them, and I became an NBA fan wholeheartedly for many, many years. He was also the NBA Finals MVP in 1990, 12-time NBA All-Star, 2-time NBA All-Star MVP, All-Star Game MVP, 3-time All-NBA First Team from 84 through 86, 2-time All-NBA Second Team from 83 and 87, NBA All-Rookie First Team, J. Walter Kennedy Citizenship Award winner 1987, still on the NBA's 50th anniversary all-time team. He still remains the Detroit Pistons' all-time leading scorer, and I don't think that's ever going to be broken by anybody, by the stretch of any imagination. NCAA Champion 1981, NCAA Final Four Most Outstanding Player in 1981, Consensus First Team All-American in 81, and the USA Basketball Male Athlete of the Year in 1980. He also coached in a 2003 NBA All-Star game, Michael Jordan's final All-Star game, ironically, and he had his number 11 retired by the Pistons. That's never, ever going to be taken down by any stretch of the imagination. He was drafted in 1981. He was the first pick, second pick overall, and went on to become a sensational player. He finished his career with 19.2 points per game, 9.3 career assists, 3.6 career rebounds, and 1.9 career steals. Just phenomenal. And in the playoffs, he was even more lethal. Just dangerous, just absolutely dangerous. His head coaching record, though, is not something to really, really brag about. He did not coach the Pacers in the 2000 finals. He took over the Pacers after that, after Larry Bird had stepped down. He finished his career with 187 wins, 223 losses, with a 456 career coaching percentage. The first 3 years he took over the Pacers, all three times they lost in the first round of the playoffs. And then the 1 year in New York, the last 2 years in New York, they didn't even come close. He took over the team, stepping down from his position as general manager after Larry Brown was fired due to that dismal 05-06 season, which is probably the worst I've ever seen from the Knicks, including this past season. So, and then the University of Florida International, he finished his career with a 26-65 head coaching record, which is also something to not really be bragging about. But nonetheless, happy birthday to him. He's 53 today, and he's still standing strong. Still proud of his roots, his basketball roots, everything. Speaking of the Indiana Pacers, and boy, we got quite a bit to talk about with them tonight. One of their players has a birthday today, and that is Luis Scola, who turns 34. He was the second round pick, 56 overall pick in 2002. He was drafted by the Spurs at the time, but he ended up being traded, I believe. He ended up being traded, never really suited up with the team. Spent his time overseas playing in Argentina, Spain. His first NBA team was with the Rockets in 2007 to 2012. He played 1 year in Phoenix and then came over to the Pacers in just last year. And his team right now is in deep, deep S-H-I-T. Yeah, I'm just going to spell it out for you, you know, just to be humorous about it a little bit. Start his career, he's won some medals. He's an NBA All-Rookie First Team in 2008, Spanish League Rookie of the Year in 2000, three-time FIBA America's Championship MVP. He's also two-time Spanish League MVP and two-time All-EuroLeague First Team in 2006 to 2007, and was on the second team in 2005. He won the gold in the Olympics in 2004 Athens when they beat USA, you know, in that tournament or whatever. I was so mad about that. And then the bronze in 2008 with Beijing. He won the FIBA World Cup in 2002, the silver with Indianapolis. He's got a lot of medals to be proud of. Right now, he shouldn't be proud of with the way that some of his teammates, including himself, are playing, because they find themselves currently being down 3-2 by the Atlanta Hawks. I'm going to get to that shortly. But anyway, happy 34th birthday to Luis Scola, and many more happy returns. Now, one thing about this show is, and this is why I personally designed it to have it take place in the middle of the week, because I can catch up on a whole lot of stuff. I can catch up on stuff that goes down on the weekend that a lot of sports shows don't really get a chance to cover because they don't air on the weekends. Like, for example, a lot of those sports shows on ESPN and Fox, they don't really get to catch a lot of stuff on weekends. Me, on the other hand, I'm paying attention. I'm paying exceptional attention to some of the stuff that's going on. I keep my eyes and ears open. And the reason why I say this is because everything was, it was a great weekend for a lot of people. You know, out there on the West Coast, and then next thing you know, Donald Sterling comes out of nowhere. I mean, wow. Unfreaking believable, man. Unfreaking believable. I didn't want to believe it at first because I'm thinking, well, why would he say that? He's owning a team where 85% of the players on the team are black. Why would he say something like that? Sure enough, Donald Sterling got caught with his foot in his mouth, and He's on the verge of no longer becoming an NBA owner. Now, this is basically what went down, okay? You know, with some of the controversials and all this stuff and everything. Over the past weekend, TMZ released a recording of a conversation between him and his female friend, V. Viviano, who was born Maria Vanessa Perez. I'm assuming that's what the V stands for. And this recording from September of last year, a man who apparently was him, you know, his voice or whatever, based off the evidence that he heard, the tape and everything. And he was ticked off over a photo that I guess his girlfriend, whatever, posted on Instagram where she posed with Magic Johnson. According to the tape, he confronted her about it and told her, quote, "It bothers me a lot that you want to broadcast that you're associating with black people." And also went on to say something like, "I don't want you associating with blacks at games. I don't want you bringing blacks to the games. I don't want you sitting by blacks at the games." The tape got leaked. TMZ found it. They put it out there. Clippers president Andy Rosen issued a statement the next day indicating that Viviano was being sued by the Sterling family, and that told Mr. Sterling that she would get even with him. Yeah. How about some serious drama that's going on with that? But anyway, a month earlier, last month, Sterling's wife, Rochelle, had sued Viviano for the return of a $1.8 million L.A. duplex, as well as a Ferrari, two Bentleys, and a Range Rover that she and her husband bought for Viviano. The lawsuit describes Viviano as Sterling's mistress, but Viviano's lawyer said the description was erroneous. Now, based off the tape, going back to the whole tape thing, the Clippers organization, the team, coaches, players, they had a meeting to discuss the incident. Both the coaches, mainly Doc Rivers, who happens to be African-American, and the players, including Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, Jamal Crawford, who are all African-American, and Blake Griffin, who's part African-American, they basically sat down and they talked about possibly boycotting the games, boycotting the rest of the series, possibly forfeiting and boycotting games until next year if the league doesn't step up and take control and apprehend the situation. Players protested Sterling's remarks by wearing their shirts inside out in order to obscure any team logo. Next thing you know, other teams started doing it. The Heat started doing it. The Mavericks and Spurs, they started doing it. Even the Golden State Warriors, who the Clippers are currently facing in the playoffs right now, started doing it. It got leaked everywhere. I turned on the TV on Sunday, and I'm like, wow. And the Clippers just happened to have a game, and I was like, wow. This is some serious ish that's going on here. And because of that, now is a possibility that Donald Sterling is going to be forced to relinquish his position as the owner of the Clippers. Now, the NBA Players Association, including guys like former players Kevin Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, Charles Barkley, and Shaquille O'Neal, and current players such as Kobe Bryant, they also condemned Sterling's remarks. Even Donald Trump stated on his opinion, saying that Sterling was set up by his girlfriend slash mistress. Spike Lee comes out and calls him having the mentality of a slave master and seeing his players as slaves. A lot of people have had a lot of different views on this, even the president, Barack Obama. Now, yesterday, Adam Silver, just a few hours earlier in the day, way before tip-off time between the Clippers and Golden State Warriors, announced that Sterling had been banned for life from the league and also fined $2.5 million. Now, $2.5 million probably doesn't phase down Sterling, but let me tell you something. If that had been me, I'd be pissed off if I had to cough up $2.5 million. That's a lot of damn money to me. You know what I'm saying? A lot of money. And this ban prohibits Sterling from attending any NBA game, entering the Clippers facility, the Staples Center, or participating in any business decisions for the Clippers or the NBA. That includes going to team practices, being at the games, taking part in anything that they have related to charity funds, anything related to the organization, anything related to the team, he can't take part in. And that's crazy because this guy is signing the players' checks. Now what are they going to do? And this has probably been one of the more severe punishments I've seen from an owner on a major sports team. It seems like Donald Sterling was like the second coming male version of Marge Schott. You all remember who Marge Schott was when she owned the Cincinnati Reds back in the 90s and was saying some racist stuff, even went as far as to calling black guys the N-word, saying that she didn't, you know, she criticized two of the Reds outfielder players, you know, saying this and that. It just went far. And because of that, Marge Schott was eventually forced to give up her ownership. Now, she died 10 years ago, but the bottom line is she said some stuff. She said some stuff. She said some serious stuff. Now, going back to Donald Sterling's situation, basically what's going on is now the owners are being forced, well, not necessarily all the other owners, they're going to come together to come down to a league vote, all the other 29 owners in the NBA. And I think it's going to be a landslide. I think it's going to be all owners against him, 29-0. Donald Sterling really doesn't have anybody to back him up, to defend him. Nobody. He's got nobody to back him up. Even his son-in-law called him a racist and said, I don't care if you fire me, but it's the truth. And I want that truth to be exposed, is basically what he was saying. So Adam Silver stepped up to the plate. And Adam Silver has only been on the job for about 3 or 4 months. But I guarantee you this, he did what I don't think David Stern would have done. David Stern would have suspended him indefinitely. He would not have banned him. Think about that. Okay. So all kudos to Adam Silver for doing the toughest thing he's had to do since he took over as the NBA commissioner just earlier this year. Also, Silver stated that he would move to force Sterling to sell the team. Now, technically, he can't fire him because you can't fire a professional sports owner. However, you can vote against him because that's how the league works. That's how they operate. And if all the other owners vote against you, whether it's more than the other owners or even so, you'll have no choice but to step down. It's a situation that could be taken to court. And if a judge rules that you have to sell the team and be forced to sell the team, then that's what you're going to have to do. Now, this will also require the consent of 3/4 or 22 of the other 29 NBA team owners. Now, it's possible that his wife might take over the ownership and management. Then now you got guys like Diddy, Rick Ross, Floyd Money Mayweather, and, you know, Oprah Winfrey. You know, a lot of these individuals that are kind of like expressing interest to secure at least part ownership or a certain percentage of ownership of the team. Now, this is actually funny. Now, check this out. Now, of course, this is not the first time that Donald Sterling has gotten into trouble, but he also received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the NAACP not too long ago. And the L.A. chapter of the NAACP announced that they would not present him with a second Lifetime Achievement Award. Well, how the hell did he get the first one? And first of all, Donald Sterling has been the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers. That's really nothing to brag about. He ain't done nothing with the team in terms of a winning culture until maybe the last 2 or 3 years. But think about that for a second, though. They haven't been winning. They haven't been winning, okay? Now, so basically that's what we got that's going to come down to it. Now, some of the former players, including Baron Davis, have spoke out about him, saying that this guy has said some stuff. And that he has those racial tendencies. So you add all of that together, and you got yourself a really, really serious problem. A really, really serious problem. So all in all, it looks like Donald Sterling, before 2014 is over, will not, officially not be the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers. I can promise you, every owner is going to vote against him. He's going to sell the team, and that's it. First of all, the guy is 80 years old, all right? And a lot of people out there saying, well, he's 80 years old. He ain't got that much time left on Earth, and he's saying all of this stuff. And it's some serious business. It's some serious, serious business, unfortunately. And because of that, I feel like they did the right thing. Adam Silver certainly did the right thing by removing him. Completely removing him. So that's what you got going on right now. And first of all, I got to say kudos to the Clippers, Doc Rivers and his players for stepping up and playing on Sunday. But they were totally distracted. They were up 2-1 prior to that game against Golden State. Golden State won. The game took place, you know, in Golden State. But you could tell those guys were distracted, including Doc Rivers himself, when you got that situation hanging over your head. They were totally distracted, and that contributed in the loss. But I also think that Golden State needed to win that game because they didn't want to go back to the L.A. down 3-1. They needed to win that game. They tied it up. The two teams took the court last night. The Clippers, they won 113-103 in front of a big crowd. The fans were totally behind them. Totally behind them. And they deserved it. Say what you want about the Clippers historically, but I got to say, this is the first time I've really seen fans really, really behind this team. And they needed that support. It was a good game. It was a good battle from start to finish. The Clippers, for the most part, were in control of this game. They needed to win, and they did. DeAndre Jordan scored 25 points for the Clippers and recorded 18 rebounds. I think that 25 points is a career high in a playoff game. He played phenomenal. He even made most of his free throws. He shot 9-for-17 from the free throw line. Also had 4 block shots, and 12 of those rebounds were on the defensive end. Chris Paul recorded 20 points and 6 rebounds and 7 assists for the team. Also had 5 steals. He struggled to shoot, but he did make the crucial plays down the stretch that he needed to make. Jamal Crawford added 19. Blake Griffin, 18. Darren Collison had 15 coming off the bench. And then even some of the other guys, Danny Granger, Glenn Davis, you know, Matt Barnes, Jared Dudley, Willie Green. I mean, just most of these players on this Clippers team are black. And you're going to come out and say something like that if you're Donald Sterling? Really? Unbelievable. Now, the Clippers are up 3-2. These two teams will take the court again tomorrow night in Golden State. That game will be on 10:30 p.m. on TNT. And if there is a Game 7, it will be this Saturday night on TNT. Times have yet to be announced, but if Golden State wins tomorrow, and they probably will, because I did say that this series is going to go 7 games. I think it's a strong possibility. A strong possibility. So I think that that's something to think about. To seriously, seriously think about. So we had that on last night. And again, kudos to the players for playing. Kudos to the players for playing. And they did the right thing. And they were strongly considering boycotting this game. But kudos to them for doing what they were supposed to do. And kudos to the fans for coming out to support the team. This is where your team, your organization really needs support. And they did the right thing. The fans really backed them up 100%, and I'm glad they did. So now the Clippers are up 3-2. These two teams will play again tomorrow night in Golden State, Game 6 on TNT. And it's going to be a good series. I had the series going 7 games, and I had the Clippers winning. And so far, so good. It has been a good series despite the outer distractions and the drama and everything that's been coming along with it so far. But it's been a good, phenomenal matchup so far. We also had last night that, we got 3 games going down tonight. Right now, we got the Mavericks in first. That game just tipped off at 7 p.m. You can catch that game on TNT right now. The Spurs are up 24-11 in the first quarter. This game just started. And this is actually, this is game 5. The series is tied at 2. The last 2 games have been really good finishes, especially game on Saturday. Vince Carter hit a game-winning 3 with Ginobili in his face. Phenomenal finish. Kudos to Dallas. San Antonio came into game 4 down 2-1. They were up big. Dallas came back and fought, but San Antonio held on to win 93-89 on Monday night. These two teams are playing each other now. You got the Spurs up. This is game 5. The series is tied at 2. And game 6 will be Friday. Game 6 will be Friday on ESPN. Time is yet to be announced. And if there is Game 7, it will be this upcoming Sunday on ABC. And if you're the Spurs, you want to try and end the series. You want to win tonight, and you want to try and get a Game 6 victory and close out this series and rest yourself. You ain't getting any younger, some of your core players. So we got that game in progress. Brooklyn and Toronto, that game's getting ready to tip off on NBA TV. This has been an interesting matchup so far in the postseason as well because, first of all, the series is tied at 2. We got a game 5 right that's getting ready to start now. Game 6 will be this Friday at 7 p.m. The time is yet to be announced. It'll probably be on NBA TV again. And then Game 7, if there is a Game 7, will be Sunday. I have Brooklyn winning this series in 6 games, and I think they got a shot to do it. I think they can. I think they can win tonight. They had a tough loss on Sunday, but I think they'll bounce back tonight, and I think they'll win in Game 6, which will allow those guys, you know, the Kevin Garnett, the Paul Pierce, the Joe Johnson, the veteran players, to rest up for their next matchup. And then later tonight, we got Portland and Houston at 9:30. That game will be on TNT as part of the second doubleheader. And this has been by far the most dramatic playoff matchup. These two teams have faced each other 4 times already. 3 of those games have gone into overtime. All 4 games have been decided well in the 100. Well in the 100. Portland took control winning games 1 and 2 in Houston. Houston was able to win and steal game 3 on Friday in overtime. And then this past Sunday, Portland made some plays down the stretch. They came back after being down, and they won game 4. They're up 3-1. If you're Houston, you need to win. You need to win. You seriously need to win. So we got those games in progress. We're going to take a quick break, our first break of the night. The time is 7:30. We're taking calls 347-327-9586. We're getting ready to go on break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the games that happened, some of the other games that happened last night, other than the Clippers and Warriors game. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Coming up, we got more of that coverage. We got NHL playoff coverage. We got the path to the draft. We got a lot to talk about with that tonight. And we got some MLB games that are in progress as well. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back.
I got a friend.
Breakdown. The time is just after 7:30. And boy, we've had a lot of ground to cover tonight. Rocket is here with you. Blood, sweat, and tears. Just about literally. No, I'm kidding. Getting back into what we were just talking about shortly before our break, we had some games that also were in progress last night. We had two other games. First off, the Washington Wizards, a team that really nobody is paying much attention to, eliminated Chicago Bulls. They won last night in a very low-scoring game, 75-69. And that's been a knock on Chicago all year, their inability to score. You don't have Derrick Rose. You don't have Luol Deng. Those are your scoring options. And there came a time when both of those guys were your top two scoring options. Now you got guys like Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, Jimmy Butler, who can score. Carlos Boozer, who's a good scorer on the inside, good jump shooter. But if the offense is going mostly through Joakim Noah and he's supposed to be, and if he's the one getting most of your points, that's a problem. That's a serious problem. But kudos to the Wizards. They won in five games, and I didn't think that they would win this series. But I did say that their athleticism and their quickness was going to give Chicago problems because Chicago is a team that plays half-court defense. It's one thing to play full-court defense, but if you don't have the guys getting back in transition, you're giving up a lot of shots, you know, by a quick offensive fast-paced team, you're going to have some problems. And if you don't have the ability to score on your end, then you're not really going to win a whole lot. I think that was the knock against the Bulls in this matchup. It's been a knock on them for much of the season. If you just look at it, now they had four players in double figures in this game last night, but Jimmy Butler, Kirk Heinrich, each had 16 points. But they don't really have that guy that's capable of giving you 20-plus per game. They don't really have that, unfortunately. So because of that, where are you going to get your scoring from? Taj Gibson. Taj Gibson, 3 for 10 last night. DJ Augustin, 1 for 10. Jimmy Butler, 6 for 15. Carlos Boozer, 4 for 12. Mike Dunleavy, who you brought over as a free agent during the offseason to provide an outside shooting spark, 2 for 8, including 0 for 3 from three-point range. That's not going to get it done. This is a game that you had to win last night to stay alive in the postseason. And you don't win. You lose badly. Real badly. And overall, the Bulls as a team shot 33.3%, 37.5% from three-point range. Meanwhile, Washington as a team shot 40.5%. Now, they didn't have a great three-point shooting percentage, but the overall field goal percentage helped them. The fact that they were able to get a lot of rebounds, now rebounding Chicago, they protected the ball a little bit better. But I also think that down the stretch, they just made more plays. And they just got a better team, period. Better team. Last night, John Wall played tremendous, scoring 24 points. Linnae Hilario, who was suspended for game four after a confrontation on the court with Jimmy Butler, he scored 20 last night, and Bradley Beal added 17. Nobody else did anything for Washington, but when you got those three guys doing it, then you're straight. Even though Trevor Ariza struggled a little bit last night, they were able to get the points from the guys that they were supposed to get the points from, and that helped. That helped tremendously. The Wizards are moving on to the first round, and congratulations to them. This is the first time that they won a playoff series in 30 years, just about. It just seems like that. It just seems like it's been a long time since they won playoff matchup. It's been forever, it seems like. But kudos to them anyway. Kudos to them anyway. And I think that they're going to be a dangerous opponent for a possible Miami in the next round. They're going to be extremely dangerous. Just think about that. They're going to be extremely dangerous. If they have to go up, if Indiana has to face them or Miami has to face them, because you're going to need quickness and speed to beat a Miami, and you're going to need strength on the inside to beat Indiana. That is, if Indiana makes it. Now, I was talking about them a little bit at the top of the show. It just seems like the Pacers are in trouble. Roy Hibbert is playing the worst basketball of any big man and any starting big man in this postseason. And down the stretch, he's just been struggling. What is up with this cat? You know what I'm saying? I don't get it. I think it might have to do with the fact that Atlanta can shoot from the outside. And when you can make shots from the outside and take away that interior and force Roy Hibbert to come out on the perimeter and guard you, yes, that is a problem, because that's going to leave the inside open for a possible drive to the basket and a finish. So I can understand the struggles a little bit. But the Pacers really shouldn't be struggling like this. You're on the verge of being upset by a team who finished 6 games under 500. And really, their winning percentage since the start of the year, 2014, has been less than average. You're on the verge of losing to them. The Pacers are currently down 3-2. Atlanta won Game 5 in Indiana and won soundly. I mean, it really wasn't that close. And now these two teams are going to be playing Game 6 again, quite possibly tomorrow night. Actually, it will be tomorrow night. And also, we're going to see the Clippers go to State at TNT. That Pacers Hawks game will take place at 7 p.m. on NBA TV. And the other game will be the OKC Thunder against the Memphis Grizzlies. That game will be the first of the TNT doubleheader at 8 p.m. Speaking of them, this is the other game that took place last night with a little bit of a controversial finish. I couldn't quite believe what I was watching. Now, I was performing last night, but I did see the clip. I caught the highlight, and I was like, wow. Un-freaking-believable. Just un-freaking-believable. Memphis won this game 100-99 in overtime, and they were pretty much in control, especially in the first half. OKC started to rally in the fourth quarter. But the struggles, the shooting struggles are continuing. OKC shot 39.1% from the field last night, 38.7% from three-point range. Not going to get them. Russell Westbrook, 10 for 31. Kevin Durant, 10 for 24. So let me get this straight. They both combined to go 20 for 55. Durant, 3 for 8 for three-point range. Westbrook, 1 for 7. Now, he did get his 30 points, he did get his 13 rebounds, but he made just as many free throws as he did field goal attempts. Cameron Durant got his 26 points. He only shot 3 for 6 on free throw range. That was totally out of character. One of those free throws was a little bit controversial, and I have a serious problem with that. And this is why I don't like Joey Crawford, their official. I cannot stand this guy. He's a bona fide fool. His refereeing privileges need to be revoked and taken away from him. I didn't understand it. Now, this is what went down, okay? This is what was going on, okay? There was so much controversy in this finish last night. Okay, before the final overtime sequence, Durant made the first of two free throws with 27.5 seconds left to cut OKC's deficit to 199, which turned out to be the outcome of the game. Before the second shot, though, Joey Crawford comes out of nowhere and just takes the ball out of Durant's hands and walks over to the scorer's table. I'm thinking, what the hell is going on? Moments later, he's screaming at the scoreboard operator asking him to make a change. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? And because of that, that takes away the rhythm. And Durant's been an 87% free throw shooter during the regular season. He ends up missing the second free throw attempt. Really? That takes away the rhythm from making that free throw shot. And I got a problem with that. I got a serious problem with that. And then after that, it gets even a little bit more controversial. 2.9 seconds remaining in overtime. Durant misses a long three-point attempt. Serge Ibaka, after the miss, hits the ball in on the rebound, and the crowd goes nuts. Moments later, the shot gets reviewed on the small little monitors, and it was determined that it was just released before. It was released just after the buzzer, which allowed Memphis to escape with the victory and to take a 3-2 lead in the series. How about that for controversy? This was just one of those crazy games with a crazy ending. But I think OKC really has nobody to blame but themselves. Russell Westbrook taking too many jump shots, even though he recorded a double-double, but he took 31 shots. That's not his job. Why is he taking 31 shots? That's supposed to be Kevin Durant taking that many shots and hopefully making more than he misses. See, I've been questioning Russell Westbrook's shot selection since going back to the finals 2 years ago. Think about this. He has, to me, he has not been the same since that injury he suffered last year during the regular season, which forced him to miss the rest of the year in the postseason. And I'm thinking, okay, well, they get ready to take on Memphis again. He's going to be the difference maker. So far, he really hasn't. 10 for 31. He looked tired on that court last night. He looked fatigued. He looked mentally wiped out. That team looked mentally wiped out. I'm thinking, this is a team that a lot of people are picking to come out of the West. I think the West right now is officially wide open. Every team that's still alive right now has a shot. San Antonio, OKC, Clippers, Golden State, Dallas, everybody. Everybody that's still alive in the Western Conference postseason has a shot to get to the finals. That's how crazy it's looking right now. And I think that Kevin Durant, and the knock on him has been he's too nice. He's too unselfish. He lets Russell Westbrook take shots. He lets other guys take shots. He doesn't demand the ball. He doesn't have that Keyshawn Johnson persona and say, give me the damn ball. You got to have that, KD, if you want your team to win. Jordan had that. Kobe Bryant had that. Even LeBron James has that. Demand the ball. Let me win the game for you. Let me make the clutch shots down the stretch. Michael Jordan is the true definition of that. Kobe Bryant is the true definition of that. Kevin Durant needs to be the true definition of that. He's got every amount of potential from a scoring standpoint, just like LeBron does. Kevin Durant needs to be taking the clutch shots more of down the stretch. Whether you make them or whether you miss them, but you are the guy. You're the number one player on the team. You were the number one guy when you were drafted. You're the number one guy now. You have to be the one to take the majority of those shots. Russell Westbrook should not be taking more shots than you. And because of that, that is a serious, serious issue. Okay? And so the way I look at it, OKC is in trouble. In fact, I won't be surprised if they lose game six. I won't be surprised if Atlanta eliminates Indiana. Right now, nothing in this postseason really surprises me. It's based off of some of the highlights and just keeping up to date with the scores and the results. Nothing's really surprising me right now. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And so I think that in this case, they need to have a team meeting. I was watching on SportsCenter earlier today. They were talking about which coach is most likely to be on the hot seat, who's most likely to be fired between Frank Vogel of the Pacers and Scott Brooks of the Thunder. Frank Vogel, hands down. At least Scott Brooks took a team to the finals. His team to the finals. Frank Vogel's team was the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, and they're on the verge of not even making it out of the first round. That is a serious, serious issue. And I'm seriously thinking, you know what? I think Atlanta is going to pull off the upset tomorrow. I think they're going to close it out. They got too many more weapons. It seems like their guys are making shots. Their guys are hitting the three-pointers. Their guys are getting on the inside. They're the team that's playing better. They're coaching better. It just makes you wonder, did Indiana lose their focus after clinching that number one seed, even though they struggled to do it down the stretch? And let's be honest, having the number one seed in the conference don't guarantee diddly. I would notice on a personal note, I've seen the Pistons have the number one seed numerous times over the years and didn't make it to the finals. 2003, they were swept by New Jersey in the Eastern Conference Finals. 2006, they lost to Miami in six games, which was the worst feeling in the world for me. 2007, they lost to Cleveland in six games. That don't mean nothing. The Phoenix Suns in 2005 had the best record in the league. They didn't make it out of the first round. Well, they didn't make it to the finals. They lost to San Antonio in the conference finals. Indiana in 2004, they led the league in wins. They lost to Detroit in the conference finals, who went on to win the championship. So it's like what I always say, having the number one seed don't mean nothing. The Miami Heat in 1999 were upset in the first round to the New York Knicks when Allen Houston hit that game-winning floater shot at the end of regulation to clinch the victory and the big win and the upset for the Knicks. 1994, and this might be the biggest upset in NBA history in the first round. The Nuggets, upsetting the Sonics in five games, winning 3-2. What made that upset more prestigious was the Supersonics were the number one seed. They were projected to be the team that was going to go all the way to the finals and win. In the first post-Jordan retirement era, and they lost. They were up two games to nothing. They had to go to Denver for games 3 and 4, and they lost. And Denver ended up winning game 5, and you had that classic shot of Dikembe Mutombo landing on the court, holding the ball, his mouth wide open, his eyes closed, screaming, laughing and everything, cheering out yes or whatever. And then in 2007, the Mavericks, they were the number one seed, and they were upset about Golden State in the first round. I always say having the number one seed don't guarantee you a damn thing. It doesn't. It just doesn't. Okay? You have to remain focused. Sometimes it's just about getting hot at the right time. It's like that in the NFL. Having the number one seed don't mean diddly. Sometimes you just get hot and you make the right plays at the right time and your team wins. That's the bottom line. And right now the Pacers are not doing that. Period. So these two teams will take the court again tomorrow, game 6, 8 p.m., TNT. You can rest assured it's going to be rocking down there in Memphis. And I think the Memphis Grizzlies are going to win. Even though I really didn't pick them to make the playoffs, I was hoping they wouldn't make it, but I'll give them credit where credit is due right now. I'll give them some serious, serious, serious credit. So right now, to update, we got the Mavericks and Spurs tied at 42. That game's in the second quarter. You can watch that currently on TNT while you're multitasking and listening to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. Meanwhile, the Nets and the Raptors game, that game just tipped off. In the first quarter. Right now, Brooklyn's up 15-11. The series is tied at 2. Both of these games that are on right now, the series matches are tied at 2. And later tonight, we got at 9:30 p.m. on TNT, the second of the doubleheader, Portland and Houston. Portland's up 3-1. They can close it out tonight. They probably will. So far, they won both games in Houston. They got some confidence. LaMarcus Aldridge is probably playing the best basketball of any big man right now in the Western Conference, at least, but most definitely the entire NBA. Those first two games, he played absolutely out of his mind. This guy deserves some credit. He's one of the best power forwards in the game. 6'10.5", can shoot, has a nice post game, and I remember when he didn't have a post game when he first came into the league. This guy developed his game over the years. His jump shot got better. His presence on the court got better. And they're on the verge of pulling off a little bit of an upset of their own. Because keep in mind, Houston won 3 of the 4 regular season matchups this year. But it's like what I always say, playoffs can be a whole different ball game. It really don't mean nothing. It's going to take a lot for the Rockets to come back and win this. Now, of course, we've seen it happen in the history of the NBA in the first round. Teams coming back from 3-1 and winning it. The Pistons did it back in 2003 in the first round. And they, like I said, they were the number one seed that year. They had a troublesome matchup against Orlando. Tracy McGrady was going off in those first four games. They made a defensive adjustment. Tayshaun Prince started guarding him more often, and his numbers kind of deteriorated a little bit. And the Pistons took care of business, winning the next three, including that tough game six in Orlando where Chauncey just went off. And they went on and won game seven, which really wasn't even close, and they moved on to the next round. So it has been done before, but can the Rockets do it? Well, if they are going to do it, they're going to have to shut down LaMarcus Aldridge, they're going to have to shut down Damian Lillard, and they're going to have to really find a way to make shots and not make any silly mistakes. Patrick Beverley, James Harden, Dwight Howard, they're really going to have to step up the intensity. Bottom line, you cannot afford to make a lot of mistakes tonight. This is do or die for you. This is your finals. You got to win this game if you're Houston, or you're going to be going fishing a lot earlier than expected. So we got that going on. Just a quick update. The Brooklyn Nets are now up by 5. It's still in the first quarter, up 17-12 over Toronto. I actually got Brooklyn winning tonight, and I got San Antonio winning to go up 3-2 as they should. But that's going to be a tough matchup, even though they swept Dallas during the regular season. But again, playoffs are a different ball game. That's just the way it is. That's the way it works. Okay. We're going to get over into the NHL real fast, just to update some games. We got one game that's currently in progress between the Philadelphia Flyers and the New York Rangers. That game is scoreless. The first period just ended. And I'm still bitter about the Red Wings. They were eliminated last Thursday while I was doing a comedy show. I'm not happy about that. I am not happy about that. I'm not going to be happy about that for a while. First of all, I remember taking the stage. They were up 2-0. I'm thinking, okay, they got this. They're going to win. Nope. They lost. First of all, it was tied at 2 in the third period. They're going to overtime, and Boston ends up winning. I'm mad. I'm boiling mad, man. But right now we got this game between Philadelphia. The series is tied at game 3. This is game 7. Do or die. Do or die. And then coming up at 9:30, we got Minnesota against Colorado. That series is tied at 3. Do or die. And we got another game 7 tonight between the LA Kings and the San Jose Sharks. This series should have been over already. What in the heck has gotten into San Jose? They were totally in control of this game. Totally in control of this game. So what you're trying to tell me is, sometimes something just happens. Something just happens. And somebody rises to the occasion just when you think you got a fox pinned down and he jumps right back at you. You see what I'm saying? Sometimes something just happens. It just happens. You know, it comes out of nowhere. You don't even know what to expect of it, and you're thinking, what in the hell is going on? May I remind you, the Sharks were up 3-0 before last Thursday. Game 4. The Kings scored 6 goals, and they win twice as much, 6-3. Game 5. They win in San Jose, 3-0. And then on Monday, they win back at home, 4-1. Boy, if the Sharks lose this game, it'll be one of the biggest collapses in NHL history. They were up 3-0. They've lost the last 3. They better win tonight, but it's going to be some problems. There's going to be some problems out there. Just a quick recap of what happened last night. We had one game that took place last night that was between New York and Philadelphia. Philadelphia won that game to tie the series 5-2. They were facing elimination. And then on Monday, because these games have kind of been apart a little bit, Pittsburgh took care of business, beating Columbus 4-3. They won the series in 6 games. Minnesota tied up Colorado in the series. They won 5-2. They were facing elimination. And, of course, the LA Kings beat San Jose. Yeah. How about that? How about that? San Jose, better win. I actually picked San Jose to win this game. I actually picked them to win in 5 games because I thought they had too much offense. I thought that they were going to really give L.A. a run for their money. Yeah, right, right, so much for that. Well, and then coming up tomorrow, if there is a game tomorrow, which, let's see, Montreal and Boston. That game is going to take place tomorrow night at 7:30. And that should be an interesting game between those two teams. That should be a very interesting game between those two teams. Very, very, very interesting. That game will take place on your local stations. You're more than welcome to watch. This will actually be the first of 7 games. This will be game one, Montreal versus Boston. May the better team win. And good luck to both teams as they take the ice tomorrow for the second round matchup. Now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got the path to the draft. We're going to talk a little football, plus we got some more baseball games that are in progress. We'll keep you updated on the NBA as well. You can catch that Mavericks Spurs game right now on TNT, the Raptors and Nets. That game is on NBA TV. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We will be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. The time is 8:10 p.m. And real quick, before I get into baseball, I just want to update those NBA playoff games for you real quickly. We got two of them currently in progress. San Antonio, the Spurs are up 53-46 right now on Dallas. That game is approaching halftime, about a minute to halftime. And Toronto is up 28-25 over Brooklyn. The first quarter just ended. Second quarter is getting ready to start back up. And later tonight, we got Portland and Houston, 9:30 p.m. on TNT. Also, real quickly, going to get into baseball real fast. We got some games that have already been in progress. And let's see what happens. Let's see what's good. Right now, we got two games that have already ended. One of those games was the Milwaukee Brewers losing to St. Louis by a score of 9-3. In that game, and I like to just kind of do this sometimes, you know, give you more insight on the games. But in this game, Milwaukee took a 3-1 lead at the top of the third after Carlos Gomez homered to deep center. And then the Cardinals responded by scoring 8 more runs. They got 3 of them in the fourth inning, where Alan Craig doubled to deep right center, which scored him, Matt Carpenter, and Matt Holliday. Actually, they got 2 runs. I'm sorry, 2 runs in the fourth inning. And then they added 2 more runs in the fifth inning. And then Alan Craig ended up homering to deep center to put the game well out of reach. Shelby Miller got his 3rd win in the season. He's now 3-2. Matt Garza off to a 1-3 start. Oh, boy. Not good at all. As if Milwaukee already didn't have enough issues. But I'm not really going to go there. I'm going to leave that alone. But for Alan Craig, he played great today. He went 4-for-5 at the plate with a home run, batted in 3 runs. And he's batting 220 for the season. So kudos to him. The other team, my team, the Detroit Tigers, defeated the Chicago White Sox 5-1. They won there last night, 2-4-3. In the ninth inning, that was a great finish. Matt Scherzer getting it done once again, just getting it done, doing what he does best. He played phenomenal. He's 3-1 of the season, but this time it wasn't just him. The hitters, they did their thing today. Now, nobody recorded any home runs, but that's okay. Ian Kinsler, who I think has been their best free agent pickup, he went 2-for-5. Cabrera went 2-for-5 and batted in a run. He scored on the run, but he did go 2-for-5. Victor Martinez went 1-for-2, batted in a couple runs. And, you know, the hitters really stepped up their game today. They really stepped up their intensity. Matt Scherzer, though, I mean, what's not to know about the guy? He pitched 6 innings, gave up just 4 hits and 3 walks, struck out 7 with an ERA of 2.08. God, I really hope that the Tigers find a way to get this contract extension done. I know that they shut down talks now, but please do whatever you can to keep the guy, whatever it takes. Keep him, okay? Seriously. Yeah, and the Tigers also won there last night in a game that was much closer, a game that really took all 9 innings to decide. The Tigers actually added that run. They were down 3-0 before the 4th inning, and that's where they made their comeback. Victor Martinez actually was responsible for that partially, as well as Torrey Hunter and Austin Jackson. Austin Jackson's playing a lot better since changing positions in the batting rotation. And Cabrera's getting his hits. I said as long as he gets at least 1 hit per game, that way I won't have to arrange for no sniper to peck him every time he takes the field. Every time he struggles, you know? $298 million. He can afford reconstructive surgery. He'll be all right. But the Tigers are really establishing themselves. They're playing good baseball right now. And they should be. They should be the king of the crop in that division. They're 14-9. They're in first place. They're 2 games up on Minnesota and Kansas City, and 3 up on those White Sox. These two teams wrap up their 2-game series. The Tigers will take on Kansas City on the road in a 3-game series starting Friday. They get tomorrow off. Good. Good. They need that off. And they'll come back home next Sunday for a matchup with the Houston Astros. But continuing some of the games that went down earlier today, or is going down right now, we actually had, man, Mother Nature's really making her presence felt. We got 4 games today that have been postponed because of the weather. One of those games, Seattle and the Yankees, Robinson Cano against his former team, that game's been postponed. Pittsburgh and Baltimore, that game's been postponed. Tampa Bay and Boston, a crucial divisional matchup, that game's been postponed. The Mets and Philadelphia Phillies, another divisional matchup, that game's been postponed. 4 games postponed in one day. I don't think that's ever happened in the history of baseball. In one day? Yowzers. Changing the weather, though, Mother Nature's really, really, really making her presence felt. But anyway, some of the games that are currently in progress. Right now, we got the Miami Marlins up at home over Atlanta 5-0 in the bottom of the 4th inning. Cleveland is down in L.A. to the Angels 3-1 in the 3rd inning. Just ended. The Dodgers and the Twins are scoreless in the 1st inning. The bottom of the 1st has just started. Oakland and Texas, that game is scoreless in the bottom of the 1st inning. The Cubs and the Reds are tied at 3 in the top of the 4th. The Cubs have 1 runner on with 1 out. We'll see what they do there. Washington is up on Houston. Washington and Houston are both scoreless at the top of the 1st. That game just got started. Right now, Washington has 1 runner on in scoring position with 1 out. And right now, on ESPN, you can catch that Dodgers and Twins game currently airing on ESPN right now as we speak. That's the Tampa Bay and the Boston game. See, I'm getting these games and all mixed up and everything. It looked like it was supposed to be postponed, but let's see. Wait a minute. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the TV wrong. It is the Dodgers and the Twins because the Rays and the Red Sox game was canceled. Toronto and Kansas City just got started there in the middle of the 1st inning. And then coming up later tonight, we got Colorado and Arizona. That game takes place at 9:40 p.m. And later tonight, 10:15 p.m., we got the Battle of the Bays, San Diego and San Francisco. We're going to see Robbie Erlen against Tim Hudson, who's 3-1 of the season. Should be a good matchup between those two teams. The Giants are currently in first place in the West Division in the National League. They're 16-11. They're 3.5 over those Padres, who are in fourth place right now. And that should be a good game. It's always a good, interesting confrontational matches between these two teams. That's just the way it's been over the years. So we got that going on. Getting into the main topic of tonight's show, and we're taking calls all night, 347-327-9586. Again, that's 347-327-9586. And this whole NFL draft, expectations are just going to be so ridiculously insane because we really don't know who's going to be the first overall pick. Now, before we get into this, we do have one news to pass along. Earl Thomas, the Super Bowl champion Seahawks, they just restructured his contract. He is now going to be with the team through the 2018 season. 4-year contract extension, making him the highest paid safety in the NFL, and rightfully so. He is the best safety in the game. He is. I'll give him that for sure. The deal is worth $40 million over 4 years and includes $27.7 million in guaranteed money. So he's going to be a Seahawk for a long time. And he deserves it. He deserves it. He made a lot of plays down the stretch. He did a lot of phenomenal things for the team. And it just goes to show they don't have enough. They don't have a lot right now because they lost a lot of core players during the offseason. That's just the way it is. Last year was the Ravens. This year was the Seahawks. Whoever wins the Super Bowl next year that team's probably going to lose a lot of crucial pieces in the offseason. I have to say, you know, with the whole upcoming NFL draft and everything, and we talk about this a lot. You know, we talked about this an awful lot. Sorry about the technical difficulties, by the way. When you're a team, and one thing we've always noticed, you know, when it comes to when it comes to making the number one overall pick, usually over the years, teams, they usually have that guy signed up before the draft. Lions did it with Matthew Stafford, you know. And I think that it's what makes it unpredictable. And quite entertaining, too. Something to look forward to. Think about this. If you're a guy like Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater, Jadeveon Clowney, Blake Bortles, Khalil Mack, Sammy Watkins, Justin Gilbert, any of you has the potential to be the number one overall pick. Let's just say that. Let's just throw that out there, the potential. But I'm anxious to see what the Texans are going to do with that number one overall pick. Now, they've had the number one overall pick in the past. They failed with David Carr. That didn't work out too well. Mario Williams didn't play that many years there. He's now in Buffalo. But the bottom line is that what are the Texans going to do now that they have a completely different coaching staff, and they're going to have a new quarterback this year, whether they draft one or they don't draft one. So what do you do now? Do you trade down for a team that's looking to get a high pick, a team that's really looking to do something? What is going to be the main objective? Where do you see yourself asserting as far as the list of names that are going to be in this year's draft? And what your needs are, because they need help on both offense and defense, especially offense. I think they could use a quarterback. I think they could use another wide receiver to pair up with Andre Johnson, because Andre Johnson ain't getting any younger, y'all. The guy was drafted back in 2002, and he's been in the league for a long time. Actually, I'm sorry, he was drafted back in 2003, but he's been around for a long time now. Eventually, you got to start thinking about the future of the wide receiver position, because, you know, he could use the help. And they could probably use another pass rusher. But I think the Texans should take, and I'm just going to throw that out there, I think they should take Justin Gilbert. They do not have a shutdown corner. In fact, they've never had a shutdown corner. They've never really had that dominant player in the secondary. Well, they did have Glover Quinn, but he's not with the team no more. He's with Detroit. But they could use a shutdown corner. You're going to need that if you're going to be in the Western, if you're going to be in the AFC. Because think about this. You go up against Denver's offensive weapons. You know, you're going to be going up against the weapons that Tom Brady has to work with in New England, the weapons that Andrew Luck has. You're going to be working up against, you know, those type of teams that have good offensive receivers. Justin Gilbert, to me, would be a good addition to the Texans. Think about that. They could use a corner. They've never had a great shutdown corner. I don't think they've ever had a good shutdown corner. The knock on the Texans throughout many years was the fact that they never really had that dominant cornerback. And I think they could use that. Even when they were going to the playoffs over the years, they didn't really have anybody in that secondary that scared you. They had a tough defense, but much of that had to do with the fact that their linebackers with Brian Cushing, the pass rusher J.J. Watt, they had that going for them. It was almost the equivalent of Detroit. That has a good pass rush, a very, very awesome pass rush, very great defensive front, good linebackers that are capable of making plays, but that secondary tends to be the Achilles heel. The Texans should seriously consider doing that. Maybe they can trade back. That's something that they could take into consideration. I think that's something that they should seriously look into doing. And if you're all these other teams right now, where do you see your team fitting? Who do you think is going to be this? See, you got a lot of these mock drafts out there. You got a lot of these guys who are making their predictions, you know, whether they're legitimate or whether they're not legitimate. You know, it depends. it depends on what they're going to do. Okay? So, because of that, what are you going to do? Okay? Now, some guys, they have Johnny Manziel as the number one overall pick. But I noticed a few guys have decided to pick Khalil Mack. And here's the thing. Romeo Crennel is going to be the defensive coordinator of the Texans. Romeo Crennel is a defensive mindset. Think about this. They need a lot. They could use help in the linebacking core as well. They could use it. They could use it. And I think the reason why they could use it is just for the simple fact that that could take pressure off of a guy like J.J. Watt, who's the anchor of your pass rush, who's the whole anchor of your defense, period. So why not use somebody like that? You see what I'm saying? Also, it could help out Brian Cushing. It could help out Brian Cushing an awful lot. Think about that, too. That's something that could help out because the guy's been beaten up a lot the last year, the last couple years. I think eventually you might want to turn the corner and say, you know what, maybe Khalil Mack can help us out on defense. Brian Cushing has played 12 games the last two seasons, 12 total games the last two seasons. 2012, he played 5 games. Last year, he only played just 7. He came off a Pro Bowl caliber season in 2011. So this is what you might want to consider doing. I think the Texans should definitely go defense in with this number one pick. Whether it's Khalil Mack, Jadeveon Clowney, or Justin Gilbert. I would say Justin Gilbert has the potential to be a number one overall pick because I think they could use help in the secondary. They could use help with the safety position, you know, but they're going to have some enticing quarterback options available. So there's no more pressure than the Texans and what they're currently dealing with as far as who's going to be the number one pick and what they're going to do with that number one pick. So that's something you want to take into consideration. That's something you definitely want to think about. You know what I'm saying? I think you should certainly make a decision because you're only going to have a week into the draft. You need to do something. But if the Texans know what they're going to do, then I say, hey, let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they're going to do and, you know, which direction that they're going to go in. I'm kind of anxious to see that. And that's what makes this draft so unpredictable. Because we don't know who's going to be first. We don't know who's going to be a top 10 pick. We don't know who's going to be a first round pick automatically as far as like, because some guys could slip. Some guys could slip into the second round. We don't know that. But I tell you right now, Bill O'Brien is going to be an NFL head coach for the first time in his career. He's going to have some enticing options to work with. And I also think that because he's more of a defensive-minded guy, kind of, growing up as a player, but he also is more of an offensive mind as a coach. So what are you going to do? Are you going to go offense as a coach? Are you going to go defense to help out Romeo Crennel on a team that really prides itself on defense a lot with J.J. Watt, arguably the best player on the team with Andre Johnson and Arian Foster? Texans are going to have some serious enticing things to think about. And that's what makes this whole thing amazing. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk a little bit more about the upcoming draft and what to look out for. And I might even make a few predictions. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. A little bit after 8:30, we're still taking calls at 347-327-9586. Here's a question for you. What do you think the Texans should do with the number one overall pick? Should they trade back? Or who do you think they should take with the number one pick? That's a little something for you to think about. And we're actually going to address that on next week's show as well, as we inch much closer to the NFL draft. So think about that. We were talking about this a little bit, you know, the whole mock drafts, a lot of different mock drafts and stuff like that. I was talking about possibly making some predictions. But before I do that, I want to update some scores for you real quickly. In the NHL, game 7 between the Flyers and the Rangers, New York is up 2-0 in the middle of the second period. The series is tied at 3, game 7, do or die. We got 2 more game 7s tonight. Coming up in less than an hour, we got Minnesota and Colorado. And we got Los Angeles and San Jose, a game the Sharks had better win, because it would be terrible if they lose that game after being up 3-0. And then the NBA, we got the Spurs up on the Mavericks 62-54. The third quarter just got underway a short time ago, so things are starting to heat up a little bit. And then Toronto is up 49-40 over Brooklyn. That game is in the second quarter. They're approaching halftime. And then coming up in less than an hour, we got Portland and Houston in a crucial game in which the Rockets need to win, because if they don't, they're going home, plain and simple. So going back to the whole draft situation, you know, you got these teams. They make their picks and stuff like that, you know, as far as their predictions and who they think is going to be taken. And it's fun to do. It's all entertainment to me, because these guys really don't know. You know, Mel Kiper, Ty McShay, Mike Mayock, a lot of these guys on the internet, a lot of these guys on television, they don't really know. And that's what makes this draft more interesting, because nobody really knows who's going to be the number one overall pick. Nobody. But again, that's what makes it so interesting. I'm looking forward to it, though. I'm excited. I can't wait. See, what makes this draft unpredictable is the fact that the Texans can use help just about all over. They need help on offense. They need help on defense. Their linebacking core can use a tune-up, because Brian Cushing is getting beat up so much now. They need help in the secondary. They need a quarterback, because I don't know who their starting quarterback is going to be this year. I don't really know who they have on their roster right now. They could use another receiver to complement Andre Johnson. They can even use a little help on the offensive line. And they could certainly possibly use a pass rusher to help out with J.J. Watt. A great pass rush can take away from the average secondary. And so that helps out a lot. Now, let's say they take Jadeveon Clowney. You would have two pass rushers to work with instead of dealing with just one primary prototypical pass rusher, a guy that can get to the quarterback quick, fast, and in a hurry. That's something to think about. But here, I'm going to make a few predictions. I'm going to just go with at least the top five picks right now. I'm going to just say, I think the Texans, they should take Khalil Mack, because he'd be a perfect linebacker fit. Because now you got J.J. Watt anchoring the front line, and then you got Khalil Mack with the linebacking core, a guy who's quick, fast, a guy who would be perfect for Romeo Crennel's defense. And he's got talent. He's got talent, and he's a guy that some people have been talking about, you know, possibly a top five pick, and guys, you know, saying that he could be the number one overall pick. And he can get to the quarterback as well. So that's something that could help out a guy like J.J. Watt, who's going to get more double teams this upcoming season. So think about that. Think about that. And also think about what the Texans can do with that number one pick. That's something to really keep your eye out for these next 5 to 6 days, or even leading up to the draft. They end up trading right at draft night. The Rams, they have the number two overall pick. Sammy Watkins. Ding, 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 ding. Come on down. Now, seriously, I think they should take Sammy Watkins, because you already got Tavon Austin, who you've been using as special teams in, you know, reverse packages, you know, running back plays and stuff. Sammy Watkins will be
perfect. He's by far the best receiver in this draft, the best playmaker and the most complete. He can line up on the outside. He can line up on the inside, play the slot. He can catch passes up the middle. He's also good in deep coverage as well, you know, catching deep passes. He can do everything that you can ask a receiver to do. And I think that St. Louis needs that, especially for the offense. You're in a division where you got Seattle's defense, you got San Francisco's defense, you even got Arizona's defense, and even your own defense. All four defenses in that division are pretty darn good. Let's just say that that's probably the best defensive division in football. But if you're the Rams, why not go with offense to help out with Sam Bradford, who, to me, is going to be playing for his contract this year? That's the way I look at it. He really hasn't shown that he can be the future starting quarterback because he's been unhealthy for the most part. So I look at it like having Sammy Watkins and you got Tavon Austin, you got a pair of good young receivers. That's something that will help out tremendously for future reference because you're going up against tough defenses in that division. And it will be something that I think Jeff Fisher, the head coach, should seriously consider. If he's available, let's say the Texans don't take him or they trade the pick to another team and that team doesn't pick him. If he's there at number two, take him. Take him. He's the best wide receiver in the draft, by far. The Jacksonville Jaguars had the number three overall pick. And to me, they could use a quarterback, actually. But they need some help on defense as well, and they need a receiver. Because I'm not so sure on Justin Blackmon. I'm starting to kind of give up on the kid. I don't want to because it's still too early. It's still early. He's only been in the league for, what, 2 years now? But I'm starting to give up on the guy, you know, based off his off-the-field issues and stuff. Now, a lot of people are thinking that the Jaguars should and probably will take Jadeveon Clowney. I think if they go in that direction, if they decide to go defense, then yeah. But I think Teddy Bridgewater will be a good option for them as well. Of course, Bridgewater has had some ups and downs, you know, from the combine workout to, you know, just some of the workout tapes that they've been reviewing of him. They didn't necessarily have him ranked where, you know, he was expected to be before the combine, you know, even before he announced that he was going to go into the draft. But I think what the case is, it's just for the simple fact that Jadeveon Clowney can help out that defensive line exceptionally well. Now, Gus Bradley has a history with working with talented pass rushers. And this is probably a pick that could help save his job for the future and keep him the coach there long term. Think about this, though. With that team in that division, you're going up against a Texans that's team that still has a good offense. You're going up against Andrew Luck, who's always proven to be a tough quarterback. I would say if you have a chance to make a pick on that, then why not? Because even though Jadeveon Clowney has a history of being a little bit lazy, personality-wise, stuff like that, I think Gus Bradley will work with him to where he can mature better and he can really elevate his game to higher standards. Because that's something that they need, that's something that they can use, and that's something that you certainly want to take into consideration. So I say, why not? I would say make the pick. I would say take Jadeveon Clowney to Jacksonville. Because I think he's going to be a top five pick, though. I do. I honestly do. I think he will be a top five pick. The Cleveland Browns. It seems like the Browns are always looking for a quarterback every single year. But I think they could go defense as well in the secondary, especially the secondary, because they just need some help. You know, they just need some help, you know. You know, based off of the secondary. Now, they already got Joe Hayden, but I think that they could certainly even bring in some more help to help complement him. Now, they brought in T.J. Ward, you know. Now, they don't have T.J. Ward no more. He's off to Denver. So, maybe you might end up considering taking a Justin Gilbert. Think about this. You got Justin Gilbert and Joe Hayden. That's a good duo
for a pair of young, talented corners. That could work, okay? But I think the Browns seriously might want to consider a quarterback in this pick, and I think this is where you do take Teddy Bridgewater. I think Teddy Bridgewater has more upside than the Johnny Manziel. So, why not? Why not? Here's the thing. It's not always about having a great workout prior to the draft. Tom Brady had one of the worst workouts, and arguably the worst workout I've ever seen at the Combine in the history of Super Bowl winning quarterbacks in the National Football League. Look how great he turned out. His workout was terrible, by the way. I remember, like it was yesterday, he ran like a 5 or 6. He had the long white tee, the khaki shorts, Adidas-like gym shoes. I'm thinking, this guy's going to be a starting quarterback. But I knew the potential that he had when I saw him play at the University of Michigan, even though he didn't play a whole lot. But I said that this guy one day is going to do something. And he did it. And he's still doing it. He's still making a bigger name for himself. So with that being said, Teddy Bridgewater should not have to worry about his struggles during the pre-draft process with the workouts, the combine drills, and stuff like that. Don't even worry about it, kid. You just go out there, you do the best you can, because either way, you're going to have a chance to be a starting quarterback early into your career, especially if you get taken by Cleveland. Seems like Cleveland has been failing miserable with quarterbacks. Tim Couch, Brady Quinn, Colt McCoy, Brandon Whedon. So if I'm Teddy Bridgewater, I should be a little bit worried if I end up going to Cleveland. But he has the ability to kind of be different and separate himself. Who says he has to be like the rest of the quarterbacks that were drafted by Cleveland? Who said that? You know what I'm saying? So I don't think he has to worry about a whole lot. Go out there, you're going to get taken by somebody, and you're going to have a chance to elevate your game to the next level. Now, at the number 5 pick, the Raiders. Now, the Raiders, to me, their defense at times last year looked phenomenal. For a while, they were in the top 10, especially they were ranked 7th in the NFL against the pass. That was even at the time when Nick Foles threw 7 touchdown passes against them. But I think if Al Davis was here, you know they would take a wide receiver. And they actually need wide receiver help. They need a quarterback, too, because they just traded Terrell Pryor. Not that he was going to be the guy anyway, but to me, I think if you're the Raiders, you should consider a wide receiver in this year's draft. I would say take Mike Evans, wide receiver from Texas A&M. He's the biggest receiver, 6'5", 225. The Raiders could use that. Because I don't think the Raiders are going to take a quarterback. I'm not so sure, but I would take Mike Evans if I'm the Raiders. Because I think Sammy Watkins is already going to be gone. He's going to be a top 5 pick. But I think Mike Evans is the second best receiver on the draft. I think that if they have a shot to take him, the guy who's been catching most of Johnny Manziel's passes over the years, why not? That would be a good pick for them. Because this is the same pick that Al Davis would make if he was here. Think about it. Al Davis is always making picks on speedy receivers and stuff like that. But because he's not here no more, it's a completely different ownership. It's a completely different coaching staff, a different organization. I think the Raiders could go anywhere with their pick. I don't know what they're going to do about the quarterback situation, though. But I do think that I wouldn't be surprised if they do take a quarterback, though. I wouldn't be surprised if they take a Johnny Manziel. I wouldn't be surprised if they took Teddy Bridgewater if he was available. I would not be surprised. I really would not be. Now, I'm going to scroll down to, I got to say this, though, real quickly, because, you know, I'm a hometown guy. I'm a Detroit guy. Now, the Lions are going to have the number 10 pick in the draft. There are rumors that they could end up trading up to go after Sammy Watkins, who, you know, he was talking about that team in the, during his recent tweet. Here's who I think the Lions are going to take, and I think they should take. Cornerback from Michigan State, Darquez Dennard. And I'm going to tell you why. Darquez Dennard was an anchor on the team with the best defense in college football last year. He's playing in their backyard. They know his game. He knows who's on the team. Why the hell not? You know what I'm saying? I was seriously, if Dark Question Art, this is why I said, if Justin Gilbert is not available, and I don't think Justin Gilbert will be available by that 10th pick, but I would seriously take Dark Question Art. Some people, some scouts in the draft say, you should take Justin Gilbert anyway. You should take Dark Question Art over Justin Gilbert. Justin Gilbert, to me, is going to have the best physical skills of any corner in this draft. And he's also a special team threat, but I think Jarquez Denard is going to be the best shut-down corner in this draft. And if I'm the Lions, I should take him, because they could use a shut-down corner. You already got your pass rush intact. Your linebackers are solid, but it's the secondary, like I said, that has been the Achilles heel with this team. Glover Quinn has been a bright spot on the team, though, in the secondary. But I think that having a Jarquez Denard would be perfect. He could play man coverage. He could play in zone coverage. He may not be great against the run, but that's okay. That run defense was arguably one of the best in football last year. They went through a 6-7 game stretch where they didn't give up 100 yards rushing. They didn't give up a lot of rushing touchdowns last year either. To me, that was probably the best run defense in Lions history in forever, it just seems like. You know? And so I think that they should seriously consider that. If you want my honest opinion, I think they should seriously consider that. So why not? Jarquez Denard coming to Detroit, perfect, perfect. But this is what's going to make this draft so awesome, because I really don't know who's going to take what or who's going to go in what direction. I really have no freaking idea. I have no clue, man. I really have no clue. But yeah. We'll see what happens, though. We will see what happens. Get ready, Rocket Nation. Buckle yourselves up. Get ready for a power trip, because this is going to be one of the more anticipated drafts we've had in NFL history, because there's going to be a lot of enticing options. A lot of big-name available collegiate players are going to be going into this draft. There's going to be a lot to choose from. And if you're the Texans, like I said, you're going to have some very enticing draft options. I'm geeked up for this draft, man. I'm gonna be watching this draft next week, next Thursday. Get ready, it's gonna go down. Next Thursday through next Saturday, it is going to go down. We gonna get it in, man. We gonna get it in. It's gonna be off the chart. It's gonna be off the chart. Well, as we come to the end of our broadcast, I got to say thank you to everybody who's been supporting the show, to everybody who checks out the show, listens to it weekly. We're on here every Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. And what I'm going to do is we're going to be back on air again next Wednesday. We're going to next Wednesday, I'm already going to hype the show up. I'm already going to promote it. We're going to talk about, it's going to be called The Best and the Worst of the NFL Draft. We're going to talk about some of the drafts, best produced players. We're going to talk about some of the biggest draft busts. We're going to have a lot to talk about on this show next week in the Rocket Sports Breakdown. That's going to be our primary focus. And, of course, we're going to have NBA playoff coverage, NHL playoff coverage, MLB regular season games, any other news and notes that's still happening out there. No, I will not be talking about Donald Sterling next week. I put that behind me. I think we all should put that behind us, because he's done. He's done. He's going to sell the team. It's officially a done deal. I can promise you that. So, once again, thank you to everybody. If you're in the Michigan area, tomorrow night, yours truly, Rocket, will be performing stand-up comedy at Last Tracks. I was there this past Monday night. We had a good show. I'm going to be there again tomorrow night, 8:30 p.m., the Rising Star Showcase, located off of Beck Road and Pontiac Trail, right down the street from Walt Lake Weston High School, located inside Breaktime Billiards Bar. If you're in the Novi, Wixom area, Walt Lake, Hell, if you're in Michigan, period, and willing to travel and can travel, come to the show. It's going to be a good one. Check us out. Seriously, check us out. So thank you to everybody who tuned in tonight and listened to the show. Next week we got a show, and then we're going to do a 30-minute podcast where we're going to preview the draft next Thursday. So at a special time, that's yet to be announced, but you will find out. In fact, at 7:30 or maybe even at 6 or 6:30, we're going to do a special. So brace yourselves, get ready for a power trip, Rockin' Nation. Thank you all once again who have tuned into the show. Really appreciate it. It means a whole lot. You can check out the rest of the NBA playoff coverage on NBA TV and TNT. The Spurs-Mavericks game, the third quarter, it looks like it's about to come to an end. The Spurs are still up. They're in total control of this game. And they're taking care of business right now. So you can check out that game. You can check out the baseball coverage on ESPN. Whatever you want to do tonight, it's your world. This is Rocket signing off in another installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. So next time, Rocket Nation, gotta love sports, y'all. Gotta love sports. Keep doing what you do. Good luck to all your teams down the stretch, whatever sport it is. Get ready for a power trip. See y'all next time.